winter, the cold season, where we will witness an increase in the disputes and even the fall of some other European governments. That's why many international analysts believe that the shift in power from the West to the East has taken place, and world powers like Russia and China are forming new coalitions through the exaltation of regional and extra-regional countries like the Islamic Republic of Iran. That's why we see Eastern pacts and organizations are experiencing more progress and prosperity when compared to Western organizations.
I mentioned the Biden trip. America and the West don't appear pessimistic about a JCPOA revival. Iran's stance on Ukraine could be an impediment, and should the JCPOA or nuclear deal revival fail, the Arabian or Eastern NATO would be an option. But is that feasible at all?
How serious would you say the notion of an Arabian NATO, Eastern NATO, is?
من معتقدم که موضوع ناتوی عربی خیلی شاید
I believe that the Arab NATO project does not hold any operational value and is more of a tool at the West's disposal for selling weapons to them. And like the famous quote from the tradesman president of the US, Donald Trump, who said Saudi Arabia is a milk cow. The Arab NATO established to milk the petrodollars of Arab countries whenever the West and Americans want to implement a plan against Iran, which requires increasing regional pressure against Iran. They try to use Iranophobia to create some form of encouragement, saying we'll assist you in the form of Arab NATO, provide armament, but it has never become operational and will never be so.
An alliance of the aggrieved, it's been called by some, referring to us nations with a grudge against US sanctions and intervention. But the Tehran-Astana Peace Summit, given its bent on seizing the future, must be past the old grudges. In any case, that's all we've time for today. So till next time, bye.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the All-Compassionate, the All-Merciful. Salam and welcome to another episode of our weekly series titled Path Towards Enlightenment, which is an endeavor to make you and us familiar with an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Noble Quran, that was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. As you know, last week we took up explanation of Surah Hadid, which is number 57 in the serial order of compilation of the Noble Quran, and mentions the heavy metallic element called Hadid or iron as being sent down by God to endow the earth itself with mighty force and provide humanity with the many benefits of its structural strength, as well as all the great tests of faith that arise from this. The surah presents several divine attributes, then proceeds with the grandeur of the Noble Quran, the state of the believers and hypocrites on the day of resurrection, accounts of the past nations, and spending in the way of Allah for establishment of social justice. It criticizes the monasticism and social seclusion and mentions the response received from the public by the previous prophets. We continue from where we left you last week, and here are ayahs 10 and 11.
وَمَا لَكُمْ أَلَّا تُنْفِقُوا فِي سَبِيلِ اللَّهِ وَلِلَّهِ مِيرَاثُ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضِ لا يستوي منكم من أنفق من قبل الفتح وقاتل أولئك أعظم درجة من الذين أنفقوا من بعد وقاتلوا وكلا وعد الله الحسنى والله بما تعملون خبير من ذا الذي يقرض الله قرضا حسنا فيضاعفه له وله أجر كريم.
Why should you not spend in the way of Allah, while to Allah belongs the heritage of the heavens and the earth? Not equal are those of you who spent and fought before the victory of Muslims in Mecca. They are greater in rank than those who have spent and fought afterwards. Yet Allah has promised the best reward to each, and Allah is well aware of what you do. Who is it that will lend Allah a good loan, that He may multiply it for him, and that there will be noble reward for him? If you might recall, last Friday, in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, we said mere expression of faith in God has no value without practical display of what the Prophet has taught, including helping the poor and the needy, in view of the fact that the wordings of the Noble Quran are among the best and everlasting signs in this regard. The ayahs that we recited to you now point to the fact that everything in the heavens and the earth belongs to the Almighty Creator, and out of His infinite mercy, people have been temporarily given worldly properties from which they ought to spend in the way of Allah, to whom is the eventual return of all. The believers are then promised divine rewards, saying that those who had expended in Allah's cause before the peaceful surrender of Mecca and had defended Islam in the battles imposed by the infidel Arabs are not on a par with those who did likewise following the victory of the Muslims. It should be noted that before the victory in Mecca, the Muslims were a poor community, so those who spent in the cause of Allah in such days of distress are superior to those who spent after the removal of poverty, when economic prosperity was achieved. It is a historical fact that the wealth of the Prophet's deceased wife, Hazrat Khadija, peace upon her, that was the inheritance of Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, and her children, was spent to feed not only the displaced Muslim immigrants to Mecca, but also to strengthen the defense of Medina in the face of the constant military attacks of the infidel Arabs of Mecca. As for active fighting in the way of Allah, it was the valor of the Prophet's cousin and son-in-law, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace upon him, that won all the battles imposed by the infidel Arabs. Ayah 11 encourages believers to provide interest-free loans to their brethren in faith, calling such goodly actions as loans to Allah, in view of the fact that interest-free loans safeguard people's prestige, removes poverty, increases love and affection, prevents usury, strengthens the economic structure of the society, controls greed and miserliness, guarantees distribution of wealth and growth in the culture of cooperation and collective development. From these ayahs, we learn that number one, charity for good causes brings rewards from Allah and assures the collective development of the society. And number two, interest-free loans promotes the spirit of brotherhood, prevents exploitation, and strengthens the economic structure of the society by removing poverty. Now let us listen to ayahs 12 and 13 of the same surah.
يوم ترى المؤمنين والمؤمنات يسعى نورهم بين أيديهم وبأيمانهم بشراكم اليوم جنات تجري من تحتها الأنهار خالدين فيها ذلك هو الفوز العظيم يوم يقول المنافقون والمنافقات للذين آمنوا انظرونا نقتبس من نوركم قيل ارجعوا وراءكم فالتمسوا نورا قيل ارجعوا وراءكم فالتمسوا نورا فضرب بينهم بسور له باب باطنه فيه الرحمة وظاهره من قبله العذاب.
The day when you will see the faithful men and women with their light moving swiftly before them and on their right, and greeted with the words by the angels, there is good news for you today, with gardens, with streams running in them to remain in them forever. That is the great success. The day the hypocrites, men and women, will say to the faithful, please let up on us, that we may glean something from your light. They will be told, go back and grope for light. Then there will be set up between them a wall with a gate, with mercy on its interior and punishment toward its exterior. These ayahs refer to resurrection and mean to say that on the day of judgment, the light of faith and good deeds, which will be on the right side of all true believers, whether men or women, will guide them to their destination in paradise, where they will be greeted by the angels and ushered into gardens of perpetual bliss, equipped with all sorts of divine bounties. On the day of resurrection, none shall carry the burden of another, and no person can recommend others except those who are given permission by Almighty Allah to recommend whosoever of the believers they find suitable for receiving mercy and forgiveness from Allah. It means that on that day, the pleas of the hypocrites and disbelievers to the true believers to rescue them will be in vain, because they had died in the state of denial of truth and were immersed in sins. A wall or barrier, that is, the record of deeds, will divide the true believers from the hypocrites and the disbelievers, though communication between them will not be cut off, so that the evildoers must realize that the mercy and grace available to those who do good was within their reach as well. But due to their own rejection of monotheism and the teachings of the Prophet, instead of mercy, now the wrath of Allah envelops them. These ayahs teach us that, number one, men and women are equal in achieving moral and spiritual virtues. Number two, the light of faith will guide the faithful toward paradise on Judgment Day. And number three, those who did not come out of the darkness of ignorance, polytheism, atheism, and hypocrisy will remain in darkness in the hereafter. In conclusion of this week's episode, here are ayahs 14 and 15 of Surah Hadid.
يُنَادُونَهُمْ أَلَمْ نَكُنْ مَعَكُمْ قَالُوا بَلَى وَلَكِنَّكُمْ فَتَنْتُمْ أَنفُسَكُمْ وَتَرَبَّصْتُمْ وَارْتَبْتُمْ وَغَرَّتْكُمُ الْأَمَانِيُّ حَتَّى جَاءَ أَمْرُ اللَّهِ وَغَرَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغُرُورُ فاليوم لا يؤخذ منكم فدية ولا من الذين كفروا مأواكم النار هي مولاكم وبئس المصير.
They will call out to them, "Did we not used to be with you?" They will say, "Yes, but you cast yourselves into temptation, and you awaited and were doubtful, and hopes deceived you until the edict of Allah arrived, and the deceiver deceived you concerning Allah. So today, no ransom will be taken from you, nor from the faithless. The fire will be your abode. It is your refuge and an evil destination." These ayahs mean to say that, in response to the pleas of the hypocrites, who would remind the believers of how they had lived with one another during the transient life of the mortal world, they will be told that instead of believing in God and the teachings of the Prophet, you persisted in your disbelief and life of sins, so our paths and destinations are different now. In other words, the hypocrites and the disbelievers ruin their own selves by failing to avail of the proximity with the believers during the earthly life. It also means that if such persons claim their acquaintance as an association with the Prophet, they will be told that since they did not believe him in their hearts, companionship with the Prophet will not save them from the punishment of the eternal fire. In this world, people may overcome their problems and punishment through ransom. But on the Day of Judgment, there is no question of any ransom or rescue from their evil fate. These ayahs teach us the following points. Number one, people are rewarded or punished according to their deeds, not acquaintance. Number two, a life of disbelief and sins entails the punishment of hell in the hereafter. And number three, there won't be any ransom or rescue on Judgment Day for the disbelievers and hypocrites.
Say to America is be true to what you said on paper.
We won't back down.
Stop the witch hunt.
Turn here now.
We will.
I can't breathe. Help me. Please.
We the people.
Americans are feeling the pinch at the pump. Rising gas prices coupled with high inflation, housing costs, and unemployment has caused a crisis in the U.S. economy. Oil prices are over $100 a barrel, and gas prices reach $7 a gallon in some states. An overwhelming majority of Americans say the country is headed in the wrong direction. Most Americans, whether Republican or Democrat, think the country's economic situation is poor. The Biden administration has asked oil companies to lower gas prices at the pumps, and the shortage of natural gas supplies has caused the countries around the world, including the U.S., to burn more coal for electricity.
Black gold.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to We the People. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. And in this episode, we'll discuss the energy crisis in America. Why are prices at the pump so high? And how has it affected the government's approval ratings among U.S. citizens? The once again rise of burning coal to produce electricity, and how the U.S. is abandoning its environmental commitments in reducing the country's carbon footprint. As usual, we're pleased to have our two experts on our program, Larry Freese, radio host from Red State Talk Radio and adjunct professor at Utah Valley University, and David Huggerford, who is a political economist joining us from New Jersey. Stay tuned.
Inflation continued to rise all across the United States in May. It rose to 8.6%, which, according to government data, is the highest increase in more than 40 years. With the increase in fuel, food, and housing costs, the Consumer Price Index, which is a broad basket of goods and services, jumped.
It's totally insane.
I was actually dreading coming to the gas station because I know it's going to be $100 once I pump.
I think it's really strangling to people.
Now, it's not just at the gas station that Americans are shocked with such high prices. Fuel oil costs have more than doubled, airfare has gone up by more than 12.6%, and natural gas has increased by more than 30%. Now, this has caused a fierce drop in consumer confidence. According to the University of Michigan Index, which tracks consumer confidence, the confidence level fell to a 50-year low in early June. Experts believe that the decline in consumer confidence will only damage economic growth. So what has caused this energy crisis we see in America?
Well, first, let me say thank you for having me on the program. Our energy crisis in the United States is largely manufactured by ourselves. When President Biden came into office, he immediately canceled the XL pipeline. Drilling in Anwar ceased. And the various pockets where there is plenty of oil and natural gas have also been determined as not usable by this particular government. And yet pockets of those that are available in the Pennsylvania, New York border, also in the Pennsylvania, West Virginia, Ohio border, as well as places in Texas and Oklahoma and even the Utah basin. So there is a large amount of this issue that has been manufactured by the United States itself. It's not to say that there isn't any impact by the fact that Russia is controlling some elements of their own production and that OPEC now sees that we, the United States, are dependent on other oil sources. And so we have gone with our hat in our hand to OPEC to put ourselves back in the positions that we were in 1970. So that's a quick synopsis of our crisis.
Now, most analysts blame the war between Russia and Ukraine as one of the main factors of surging oil prices. Also, the demand in the oil market has nearly reached pre-pandemic levels, but producers are not producing oil enough to meet rising demand. Now, OPEC was short almost 3 million barrels of oil a day from its target in April. The White House, deflecting blame from itself, believes the war has caused gasoline prices to surge by more than $1.70 per gallon. So is there a fuel crisis today in the U.S.?
Well, I think that there's not a distinct gas and energy crisis. There's a general economic crisis, which is generating effects in terms of gasoline prices. It used to cost me, here's a report from the front line. I used to spend about $20 to fill my tank in my car. Now it's $50. So that does create, I can afford it, but if people can't, why, that's quite another matter.
Even though gas prices have dropped moderately in July since its steep spike in April, May, and June, analysts believe that gas prices at U.S. pumps would rise again. Ed Hirsch, an economist at the University of Houston, believes that the national average would likely reach $6 a gallon by Labor Day, early September. The president, from his Twitter account, asked companies running gas stations to bring down the price they're charging to reflect the cost they're paying for the product.
Well, the reasons behind the crisis are really policies by the United States government as to our immediate impact in our economy. There are some other influences because of taking away our own independence, which we had through the previous administration. And as a result of that, the United States is more particularly dependent on other outside sources, which should not have taken place. But on a global basis, where you have now OPEC in a position to be able to sort of manage and influence both production and price, as well as Russia, because the European continent is now more dependent on oil than they have been previously, because they are no longer receiving the shipments that were coming from exports of the United States. So that puts both of those two oil-producing countries in a place of strength, and giving that influence, if you will, to the European continent as well as other parts of the world. And so that's the byproduct of the United States being not energy independent and not able to export the product that they were able to export under the previous administration.
The U.S. Oil and Gas Association, in response to the president's tweet, taunted him and said that it's working on it, and added, please make sure the White House intern who posted this tweet registers for Econ 101 for the fall semester. Jeff Bezos also criticized the president's tweet, saying that inflation is far too important a problem for the White House to keep making statements like this, and added that it's either straight-ahead misdirection or a deep misunderstanding of basic market dynamics.
I think we have to go back all the way to Karl Marx, and he spoke of crises of overproduction. We generally hear the crisis attributed to the magic virus, but in fact, according to the Federal Reserve, the household debt in the United States, is the real cause. If you look at it, between mortgage debt, credit card debt, student loans, and what's the other, auto loans, by quarter one 2020, total household debt in the United States was over $16 trillion. And if you average that out over, and you look at what the average household is carrying, that they're carrying more than $200,000 in debt of the types that I have described. And, this is against a median household income of $69,000, pay for food, clothing, all the other expenses, and then try to pay off $200,000 in debt. It's totally impossible. It brought about a crash, a financial crash, just like the one of 2008, which at that time there was no joking around. It was due to an overloaded mortgage market. Home buyers had been lent too much money. They couldn't pay it all back. So this is just the whole thing coming back, you know, but much worse this time. And you could see it coming. I knew by 2018 this was going to happen.
Now, according to the recent Gallup poll, two-thirds of Americans have stated that the recent surge in gas prices is causing them immense hardship. This response is up from 52% feeling the same way in April. Now, the percentage of people feeling severe hardship from the rise of gas prices in America has increased from 14 to 22%. Now, obviously, those with lower incomes are feeling the pinch much more. 80% of adults in lower-income households earning less than $40,000 a year say the rise in gas prices has caused them severe hardship.
Yeah, inflation is a bit of a problem right now for people, generally speaking, because you have a good part of the country that lives, you know, kind of paycheck to paycheck, and some that were able to live a little bit better than that. But what is happening now, because inflation has really taken from individuals their discretionary income, they are no longer saving at the same rate that they were saving before. They're spending more money on those products that are necessary to live, gas, food, clothing, and other things. They have begun to choose to let go of the extra expenses, such as going to the movie or eating out as often as people have eaten out, or maybe even grooming their dog. And so those choices are taking place now in the United States, and people are beginning to rethink how they need to live. Some are thinking about picking up a second job in order to be able to make ends meet. So there's all these influence because inflation has created these price hikes that are changing the culture of American spending, consumer confidence, economic activity, and those things.
Most Americans, that is 85% of them, believe that the country is headed in the wrong direction. The statistics are not surprising about Republicans who were pessimistic about the government from the start, but now 78% of Democrats also believe that the country is going in the wrong direction. This is according to APNORC polls conducted late June 2022. The poll also shows that 80% of Americans believe that the U.S. economy is in poor condition.
Well, of course, that's, you know, this inflation really underlies the, you know, the, as I say, it's quite comprehensive, and it affects all areas of the cost of living. And I don't see anything happening to help the average person. There are things that they could certainly do. You know, they could put a whole lot more money into federal food stamp subsidies, you know, and I don't see them doing that. So, you know, generally, you know, I would say it's just very ineffective level responses at the government level. I think it's really up to the banks that are running the show here. That's where the power is located.
Now, amid the economic crisis, Joe Biden's approval rating has sunk to as low as 30%. Now, this is the lowest mark that he has ever received in a new national poll. The poll was conducted by the Civics Poll's daily tracking survey of registered voters. Now, voters from every age group, all educational levels, and both genders showed below 40% approval ratings. Not surprisingly, the younger voters aged 18 to 34 were the least satisfied, with rates only at 21%. So what is the government doing to ease the economic crisis today in America?
Well, they're not really doing anything to resolve the U.S. crisis. In fact, it's a position that they want right now because this administration is trying to control resources. And resources include food, water, and energy. And because they are trying to control those resources, if they can, in fact, create an inflated price structure when it comes to any of those three, then necessarily people become more dependent on the federal government. And social welfare programming is exactly what this administration would prefer, because they would move us toward levels of socialism or dependency upon the federal government. So this is actually their narrative and exactly the way that they are marching us toward what they want as an end goal, and that is greater dependence on the government itself. So this is their plan.
Biden, in a bid to save face in dealing with mounting criticism for his handling of the economy, has asked Congress to suspend the federal gasoline tax for 3 months and has called on the states to do the same. Experts believe that this is only a political stunt, since the 18.4 cents on gas and 24 cents on diesel will not do much to lower prices at the pump. It would take some time for the price cuts to get approved, and by that time, the price of oil has gone up or down, and the 18 cents cut wouldn't amount to much.
They are doing very little. They're not granting new drilling licenses. For instance, in the oil producing areas of the United States, they're generally holding up on increases of energy production and so forth, offshore drilling for gas and so forth. And I think the thing is that, oil and gas companies, the energy companies, they like shortages. You get high prices and they get high profits.
The Biden administration and the Democratic Party are not meeting their promises on climate change either. Some analysts believe that with the energy crisis and the rising cost of fossil fuel, the U.S. would be more inclined to use renewable energy and try to tackle climate change. That has not happened. Instead, burning coal has increased, as well as plans to build new infrastructure to drill and export more natural gas, making the country more dependent on fossil fuel.
When we talk about going green, remember that even electric cars need to stop and be powered up. And that power comes through electricity. Electricity comes through coal-fired power plants. And so going green is kind of an interesting oxymoron, because necessarily the very end product or the very end resources that produces the electricity is the enemy of the state, and that is coal, coal-fired power plants. And so what's next? Well, what's next is trying to be able to do something with respect to solar energy. And that has kind of lost favor, at least on a large scale, because there are so many complications related to it.
Now, the price of gas and high inflation is really taking its toll on Americans, especially in low-income households and minority communities, which tend to earn the least. Now, the Biden administration doesn't seem to have a solid solution to tackle this crisis, and as a result, has drawn fierce criticism and also bipartisan dissatisfaction. Minority communities, which normally vote for the Democratic Party, are becoming increasingly pessimistic towards the government because they're the ones hit hardest by the economic crisis, and nothing is being done to ease their pain. And now it's time we check in with Abbas Mutarim to see what he has prepared for us this week.
Capitalism is a system that is exploitative and criminal to its core. It steals the wages of the worker, all for the corporate capitalists to rack in huge profits. And no, I'm not referring to wage slavery, which is yet another exploitative part of capitalism. I'm talking about wage theft, which is one of the many ways capitalist corporations exploit workers. These capitalists and their corporations, they are literally stealing your hard-earned money, and many times, people don't even realize it. First, what is wage theft? Wage theft is when a company steals a worker's wage, and this can happen in many different ways, whether it's paying less than minimum wage, not paying overtime, or not paying for all the work that was completed. It's a so-called white-collar crime that predominantly impacts low- and middle-income workers. Through wage theft, corporations steal $50 billion, over $50 billion from their employees every single year. Literally, they are committing robbery against their employees, yet rarely face any type of consequence. Corporations, they do this by taking quote-unquote small amounts of money from workers, but they do this to workers en masse. And if a worker isn't in a union or the workforce isn't properly organized, the worker in reality can do little to stop from being exploited. Even if the worker attempts to sue, the company steals such a quote-unquote small amount of a wage that if a person tries to take it to court, they will end up losing money because of how expensive it is to sue a company. Now imagine being one person trying to take on a multi-billion dollar transnational company that has infinite resources and numerous lawyers. The lawyers, they will literally drown the person in hell with paperwork. And not only that, but if someone is living check to check, they can potentially face retaliation by the employer and lose their job or get hours cut. And if they're undocumented and the employer knows this, they can literally get a worker deported. This effectively puts the worker into a subjugated position with a back up against the wall. And this shows the true exploitative nature of this capitalist racist system. These corporations, they're rarely held accountable. And when they are held accountable, companies get a small slap on the wrist and the reward is always greater than the fine. A company might make billions and billions off of wage theft over the years and get a small fine in comparison to what they have stolen. If we look at the infamous Walmart, since 2000, it's estimated that Walmart has spent $1.4 billion in fines due to wage theft. But this is literally nothing. This is nothing in comparison to the total revenue that Walmart makes. As in fiscal year 2021, Walmart generated revenue of $559.2 billion. These corporations, they just treat these fines as part of their business strategy. Because in the end, they are making massive profits by stealing wages. And the government, they allow all this to happen because the government is literally ran by and controlled by these corporations. The government will always be allied with monopoly capitalism. And in many ways, the USA is really the United States of corporations. And the goal of the US is always to make profit. So of course the government will allow this to happen. And every once in a while, they're gonna slap them with a fine and call it regulation and accountability. But if an average person commits a robbery like they do, they will be faced with a lengthy prison time. Bank robbers literally get years and years in prison. But when Wells Fargo steals wages from its employees, it gets a fine if they're even caught. Even the smallest of so-called crimes under this capitalist system are more punishable than corporate theft. For example, a black man named Fairwayne Bryant, he is spending life in prison for stealing a set of hedge clippers. And George Jackson, he was falsely accused of stealing $70 from a gas station and was literally assassinated by prison guards. Yet these corporations, they steal billions upon billions of dollars from workers every single year. And this shows the capitalist system for what it is. It is exploitative, it is criminal, it is anti-human. And these capitalists, they literally tell you to pick yourself up from your bootstrap and go get a job. And even when you get a job, they steal your hard-earned paycheck. They steal your wages. It must be understood that wage theft is a fundamental part of capitalism. It is not something that can be reformed through more regulations, even though regulations, they can do some good. But as long as the capitalist system is held intact, this will continue to happen over and over again. The capitalist system as a whole must cease to exist. When a few people control the corporations, factories, land, resources, and raw materials, there will always be exploitation and theft. This exploitation can only cease to exist when power is put into the hands of the people. This is Power to the People.
And that was our show, everyone. Thank you for watching. I'm your host, Daniel Arya. Do tune in again next time for another episode of We the People. Bye-bye for now.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The following is the text of the speech delivered on June the 28th, 2022, by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the head of the judiciary branch and a number of the top officials and employees of the judiciary. That other case was related to the Battle of Uhud itself. In the Battle of Uhud, the Muslims were victorious in the beginning of the battle. First, they attacked and crushed the enemy. But when they neglected the strait because of worldliness, the situation became reversed. God kept his promise to you, but what did you do next? Instead of being thankful for his blessing and divine promise and giving thanks for his divine grace, until when you became weak-hearted, when your eyes saw the spoils of war and that some people were collecting the spoils, you became weak-hearted and you disputed about the affair. You started to argue and disagree with each other. You see, you must look at these Quranic phrases from a scientific, sociological point of view. See how a country, a state, a government can progress, and on the other hand, how it can be stopped and how it can fall.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Find the answer to these situations in these Quranic verses. Until when you became weak-hearted and disputed about the affair and disobeyed, you had rebelled and disobeyed. The Prophet told you to do something, but you didn't do it. Then, when that happened, after he had shown you that which you loved, and after God had given you what you wanted, which was divine victory, and you were achieving complete victory, you behaved like that. So, of you were some who desired this world, and of you were some who desired the hereafter, and he turned you away from them. The Holy Quran, Surah 3, verse 152. The Almighty God acted in accordance with His divine tradition and turned you away from them. He prevented you from defeating them, and instead you were defeated. This is another divine tradition. In the beginning, the divine tradition was that you stood up to the enemy's intimidations and moved forward. Then the divine tradition that applied to this situation was that due to your worldly desires, worldliness, seeking your own well-being, not working, not struggling, seeking the spoils of war and the like, you brought misery upon yourselves and others. Two verses that are close to each other in chapter Ali Imran talk about these two different traditions.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years. Guiding me from all the ways that were wrong. that you're gone. You've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home. In
the limelight.
Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. Stay with us for an article in this regard written by Jessica Corbett, journalist. This article is published under the heading Study Ties, Forever Chemicals, Exposure to Billions in U.S. Health Costs. Stay tuned for more. Research published recently warns that forever chemicals used in everyday products could lead to tens of billions of dollars in medical costs in the United States, globally infamous for its for-profit healthcare system. The new study published online in the journal Exposure and Health focuses on per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances, or PFAS, a class of over 4,700 manufactured chemicals that persist in the human body and environment for long periods. Because of their use in everything from firefighting foam to food packaging to furniture, the substances have been found in drinking water, soil, and people across the U.S. The researchers, led by Vladislav Obeskov of the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, calculated how many Americans were likely exposed to PFAS in 2018 using blood samples from the U.S. National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, then examined the studies from the past decade of diseases tied to the chemicals. PFAS have been connected to various health issues, including multiple types of cancer, childhood obesity, and damage to immune and reproductive systems. The study estimates the economic burden of 13 medical conditions that may result from daily PFAS exposure. Our findings add to the substantial and still mounting body of evidence suggesting that exposure to PFAS is harming our health and undermining the economy, said study co-author Linda G. Kahn, an assistant professor at New York University Langone Health, in a statement. The researchers determined that 13 conditions potentially resulting from PFAS exposure could cost Americans $5.5 billion to $63 billion over the lifetime of the current population. Among the five conditions with the strongest connections to the chemicals, the biggest contributors to the economic toll were childhood obesity followed by hypothyroidism in women. Dr. Leonardo Trasande, another co-author and NYU Langone professor, said that our results strongly support the recent decision by the Environmental Protection Agency to lower the safe, allowable level of these substances in water. The federal agency last month took what green groups called baby steps on drinking water contamination by common PFAS, issuing 4 health advisories to lowering the levels for PFOA and PFOS, and 2, establishing new guidance for Gen X and PFBS. Consumer Reports senior staff scientist Michael Hansen said at the time that EPA's move is a major victory for science and represents an important first step to ensure everyone has access to safe drinking water, but also called on the agency to adopt legally binding standards. Alongside the new advisories in June, EPA Administrator Michael Regan announced a new grant program to invest $1 billion to reduce PFAS and other contaminants in drinking water. Based on our estimates, the cost of eradicating contamination and replacing this class of chemical with safer alternatives is ultimately justified when considering the tremendous economic and medical risks of allowing them to persist in the environment. Trasande said recently, adding that his research team now plans to study the long-term risks of PFAS in U.S.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Said Pureza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Said Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
South Korea will soon resume large-scale military exercises with the United States. Seoul's recently appointed foreign minister Wednesday met with the foreign press and explained the importance of the U.S. alliance and the drills.
We expect that the Ministry of National Defense will resume training to maintain the South Korea-U.S. combined defense capabilities so that South Korea's security can be maintained.
The South Korean envoy placed the responsibility for subsequent military tension on North Korea.
North Korea's nuclear and missile development and provocations are the most important causes of tension on the Korean Peninsula.